for members only. Golf Smarter number 443, published on July 1, 2014.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
How to take your A game from the range to the course with Ken Doherty.
This is Golf Smarter.
Welcome back to the Golf Smarter podcast, Ken.
Thank you.
It's great to have you back on the show. It's great to have you back in the studio. I appreciate it. Also, let people know, you and I recently did a video together that's on the Golf Smarter YouTube page, Golf Smarter TV. And even though we did it for Marin Country Club, I think everybody should be aware of this because we did it on course care and little things that you should know. And most importantly to me, how to clean up your divots on the green.
Yeah, that what we did applies to every golf course, every single golf course.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I feel like, okay, this is how you put a rake back in the bunker. Mm-hmm. You know, some people just throw them there. They're in the bunker. They're sitting on the side. No, we put it down with the handle sticking out.
Well, there are different rules when it comes to that for different clubs. Some like them in, some like them out. So some like the head in with a handle out. That's how we do it. Mm-hmm. But there are different rules for there. But as far as fixing a ball mark and raking the bunker and things like that, they're pretty standard.
And I still go back to my number one rule that everyone should be following, which is spend more time cleaning up divots on the green than looking for lost balls.
Yeah, if only.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, I guess so. But today I wanted to talk about taking your A game. How do we take our A game from the driving range to the golf course? And you and I were having a conversation about this once, and you mentioned that it's a very different type of golf on the range because of the balls, your mindset, things like that. And I thought it was worth pursuing because there's some tidbits in there that someone's going to be able to walk away with going, okay, I'm going to be a better player because of that.
Yeah, I don't even know where to begin. I mean, there's so many variables when it comes to
all right, let me throw one out on the range, the balls.
Yeah.
Well, let's start with that.
In most cases, they're very different. They're not the quality of the golf ball you use on the golf course. In fact, we took our yardage markers away because we have limited flight golf balls because we have a little shorter range. And we don't feel that if they hit a range ball 150 yards, a good golf ball or one that you take to the golf course will go further. So it's really not a good indication of how far they're hitting the golf ball. So I don't want that, for lack of a better phrase, that false advertisement. I don't want them thinking they're hitting it 150 yards. They go to the golf course, take that 8-iron or 7-iron, and now they're hitting it 160, 165 yards. I don't think the range should be used for yardage anyways. I think that should be used for hitting the ball straight and working the ball and working some of those kinks out.
Well, I would tend to, I don't know if I'm going to disagree with you on this, but where are you going to learn how far you hit each club? It's really hard to do on the golf course because you need to know. That's one of the things that I'm having with my son right now is like he's really complaining he's not very good. And I said, well, learn how far you hit each club. You don't know. You're asking me, should I hit a 5-iron here? I don't know. How far do you hit a 5-iron, you know?
Yeah, I think you can do some of that on the range, but to be exact and know exactly how you hit it, I will tell somebody to go out in the late evening when nobody's around, and if you're not quite sure how far your clubs go or how far your 7-iron goes or whatever the club you're looking to find out, take 3 or 4 golf balls from certain distances and hit them to the green using your GPS or whatever device you have to see how far, and then you'll know for sure because it's on the golf course, it's actual yardage, it's the real ball, and so on.
That's fine for country clubs.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It's not an easy task. You're right.
No. So is there a way, well, should we basically assume that every course is using low compression golf balls on the range?
Not necessarily.
So we need to find that out before we even start hitting balls from them.
Well, it's not just low compression. I don't think a lot of people use the limited flight golf balls as we do.
Yeah, I meant limited flight.
But there's also range ball differences from your average golf ball. Some country clubs use brand new Titleist or brand new Callaways for their range balls. They might have a striper on them, but they're actual golf balls. To me, that's realistic But how many of those
do
you
practice on the ball?
Yeah, if they say practice, you know, they're not the quality of a golf ball you're going to be playing on the golf course.
So how are we able to compute that when we're like, okay, good, I'm hitting these limited range, limited flight balls. I'm hitting at 150 yards with my 6-iron. How do I say, okay, so that means with my Pro V1X, my Pro V1, my Dixon Earth, Dixon Wind ball, how much more is that going to fly? How do we figure that out? How do we
I don't think you can do it exactly. And let's just say you've got a bucket of brand new range balls. Mm-hmm. Well, then you can have some idea, maybe calculate 10% or whatever. You're not going to get exact. But the problem with most ranges is you've got some old golf balls. You've got some new golf balls. They're not going to fly the same. I've hit two shots that I thought that were the same. One falls out of the sky and the other one sails. That's too inconsistent for me to be concerned about how far that ball's going.
It's a real tough one because that's the first place in the golf course where you definitely see a difference. Like, I was hitting that one, like all day long, I could hit it. So I know that for me, what I'll tend to do is with a bucket that has mixed balls of old and new, and it's pretty obvious which balls are a lot older and which ones are a lot newer just by the shine, because I don't really clean them that well, just get the dirt off of it. But if it's a beat up ball, I'll use that for my short game. I'll just use that to work on my stroke for the pitching and the chipping, which I do a lot of. Like, I have one driving range over here, Indian Valley, that it's a line of mats. And what I do is just hit over the mat. It's like, okay, I want to hit that mat now. I want to hit that because there's no one else there. I want to hit the third mat. Now I want to hit the fourth mat, you know, and see if I can get it to bounce on each mat from thing to thing. So I take the older balls for
that. It's a much better way to practice, actually. Because you want to practice how far you hit the golf ball. There's a lot of people that look at the flagstick, and then there's others that are very good at chipping and pitching, and they pick a location to land the ball. Mm-hmm. And picking a location to land the ball and having it land there is very important.
Target-oriented golf.
Absolutely.
We just talked about that. Okay, well, I'm glad that I'm doing something right. The thing that's hard to figure out then is how long is it going to roll, you know, depending on... But when we talked to Dave Stockton a while ago, he said that it's for him, it's all about, is it a low shot or is it a high shot?
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's how I describe them as well. I if I'm teaching that, you know, people get confused with different shots and chip, pitch, whatever you call them. It's a high ball or a low ball. And, you know, the low ball is the one you want to hit as much as you can. And the green's going to tell you, or the surrounding area is going to tell you whether you need to hit a high ball. And I think you should be hitting the high ball only when forced to.
You're a big proponent of keeping the ball on the ground as long as possible.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Not only do I believe people are more consistent that way, but they eliminate disaster too. You take a bigger swing and try to hit it up in the air and you miss it slightly and you could hit it right over the green.
Yep.
Or put the club in the ground and leave it right in front of you, where if you try to hit it low, it's more of a short putting type of stroke, or certainly below the waist, and your inconsistency is much less. And obviously you can almost eliminate the disastrous shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've definitely taken to that idea and really worked on, do I need to hit a high shot or a low shot here? Okay, there's a sprinkler head there if I just need to get over that. All right, so I'm going to have to go a little higher, obviously, but I just want to get over it. Or there's a bunker in the way. Or the pin is close to the side of the green I'm on. Obviously, you don't want the ball to roll a lot. You want to just kind of let it land softly and stop.
There are some people that are one club chip pitchers and they use just their sand wedge or whatever it is. And if they're good at it, God bless them. Good. But if you are struggling or you occasionally miss one pretty badly, you probably shouldn't be using that unless you're forced to.
There's a video that I put on our members site from Tony Manzoni, a great tip about keeping it on the ground, that when you're on the fringe or just off the fringe on the green, he has this tip, and I've been using it, and I cannot believe how close I've been getting to the pin with these. I take the 8-iron, and I use it like a putter, but I stand it on the toe.
Yeah, toe down.
Toe
absolutely.
Down and just use a putting motion.
Absolutely.
And people are like, how'd you do that? It's like, it's not that hard. And what's funny to watch when I show people what I learned with this is putting it on the toe, it makes them very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
People do not like to do that.
Yeah.
My friends don't, at least.
Yeah, I saw somebody using that method 30 years ago, and he was very consistent with it. Now, it's not one where you're going to hit it a long chip. I think that most of the time you're going to use that method, you're fairly close, because the ball doesn't come off hot. It comes off kind of dead, which is kind of nice. The ball doesn't get away from you.
Yeah, and yeah, it feels like a putter roll.
Yeah,
once
exactly.
It gets going. And I've never done it where the ball was in the air, and when I say in the air, about 6 inches off the ground.
That's right.
I've never done it where the ball was in the air for more than 4, maybe 5 feet.
Exactly.
And I have a friend who likes to use his hybrid to do that, to just get over. But that ball just...
It's perfect when you're immediately around the green, around that fringe area, real close.
But the ball explodes off the face of a hybrid.
Well, that's true.
I mean, it's a very different stroke than a putting stroke at that point. Because it goes really fast. And I'm really good at going in other directions. So back to the driving range and the difference between... All right, so we started with balls. So there's really no way of knowing, you know, what kind of balls they use. You can ask, but you're really not going to be able to send. So you're just saying... And even the older balls in these buckets that have lost a lot of the dimples that are worn out, are you going to be able to tell if you're hitting the ball straight that day? I mean,
there's
going to
be less curvature with a ball that doesn't have any dimples. So it's, you know, I a lot of times I go, it depends on the golf balls, but if they're not very good, to me, that's just stretching and exercise more than practice.
So work on your short game with those bad
absolutely.
Balls.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so just no way to know. So, and I'm surprised that you took away the yardage things. I would...
Well, think about it. If I've got range balls that are 15, anywhere from 10 to 15% less, plus we're hitting a little uphill.
Right, you're hitting uphill as well.
You've got somebody who normally hits a 7-iron, and I'll just throw a figure out there, 145 yards, and now they're hitting at 135 yards and coming to me wondering, you know... Or they're misjudging when they're going to the golf course and vice versa. It's not a good representation of what they're actually doing. So I don't want to give them any false advertisement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And believe it or not, out of 500 golfers over there, well, more than that, 500 memberships and 800 or 900 golfers, I had 2 people ask me about where they were. No one else.
Really?
2 people. That's it.
Really? So it's not that big of an issue?
No.
What is the issue that comes back to you? What do the members come back to you with this, I'm having an issue with the driving range?
Well, it's what we're going to talk about today is I hit the ball great on the driving range, but I can't take it to the golf course.
All right. Well, before we get there, how about the difference between hitting off of mats versus hitting off of grass?
Mats are very forgiving. And so you can, it's not a true test of compression and where you're hitting on the ground. You can hit behind the ball on a mat and get away with it.
Right. You can hit the ground first.
Exactly.
And you're going to get a good stroke off. Because, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I much prefer, as most players probably prefer, to be off the grass, because there's a true test versus the mats. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. And some mats are very different. I mean, you guys have really nice cushiony mats that, I mean, they don't even, the bottom of the, bottom of your clubs don't turn green on those.
Well, yeah. And I'll tell you what, if you want to give a lesson and have it be successful, put them on the mats.
That was it.
Yeah.
We'll get to the lesson in a minute.
Yeah.
All right. So let's see how we can take our A game from the course, from the range to the course. How do we take our A game when we just leave in the range going, oh, I feel great today, and then it just doesn't pan out?
Well, most people that hit driving range balls don't have a care in the world. They're free. They let it fly. There's no penalty. There's no score. They've got a whole bucket of golf balls to hit, and they swing freely. And I mean mind and body. When you go to the golf course, that's a very different scenario there. It's one ball, one hole, one score, and so on. So we tend to get a little bit tighter. We tend to steer a little bit. On the golf course. Our mind is cluttered with information, mechanics, and so on. And that is not conducive to hitting a good golf ball or playing good golf.
Right.
You've got to be able to go to the golf course and be free. I'm sure there's some of you have either played a golf course that is wide open and you can just swing for the fences, and those are the days that you hit it really good. And then there's a golf course that you play very tight and you don't swing the same. You try to steer it, or you get a little afraid to let it go and you won't hit it as good. And you need to be able to go to that tight golf course or that tight hole and be loose and let it fly. And that's a tough thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Would you recommend, if you feel that tension, if you know, well, you know, the other thing at the driving range is that you have multiple swings. I mean, you know, it's like, okay, I just took three swings and one of them was worked. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like, get three in a row.
Yeah, you don't get a second serve, do you?
No, you know, I'm a second swing All-American is what we
well,
like.
Well, you can go back. We can go right into how many times do you take a second putt or second swing and you hit it very well? That's because it doesn't mean anything. Right. So you're relaxed and you let it fly, and that should give you some information about what you should do on the first one. We do get too tense and swing too tightly and steer it, and we're much freer on the second one when it doesn't matter. And I've told people, it seems kind of strange, but you don't play well because you care too much. Mm. If you didn't care, you would play well better. And it
is that, like people say, play like a little kid?
Yeah, absolutely. When you're young, you're fearless, and right. you let it fly. And when we're old, our mind moves a lot more, and different experiences make us think differently as we go on, and it makes a big difference.
Well, a couple of shows back, Jim Waldron of Balance Point Golf School, and I hate to be name-dropping, but this is my show, so I will. But Jim talked about on putting, and this was a huge one for me. He says the keys to putting are confidence and positive indifference. And I think that's basically what you're saying. The positive indifference, like,
absolutely.
Okay, I'm good.
That's
but,
interesting.
And
yeah.
if it doesn't go in, I'm okay.
Yeah.
I'll let it go.
Yeah.
You know, just pull back and let it's okay and stop overthinking it and worrying about something.
Well,
that's
life
out
or
of
death, life or death on the golf course. And it's not at the range or on the putting green. It makes a big difference. Tension and what our minds go through makes a big difference. And there's a whole different mindset on that golf course than there is at the range and practicing.
Stop playing for money.
Or be able to put your mind in the right place
and
while you're playing
about,
for money.
Yeah.
You know?
So you're saying there's so much, it's such a mental element of the game.
There is. There was a gentleman that came about a year ago at our club, and he had a laptop computer, and he hooked me and another member up to this device where he put something on our head, and it measured electrodes and all this stuff. And this program he had made a certain sound when you were thinking too much, when you were swinging the club. And it was a tone, a long tone, and then it would change to a different tone if your mind was clear. And the member got it, and it had the tone that was, you could tell he was thinking a lot, his swing, the whole bit. And he had a very hard time, took him a long time to get out of that tone and to clear his mind. And I was able to do it pretty quickly, and the reason why is because I don't think of mechanics when I play golf. I pick a target, so I was on the range, I picked home at the end of the range, a specific window, and I looked at it, studied it, and I swung at it. So my mind was free. It was clear. And, you know, there's many ways of, you know, there's books out there and so on, but this actually measured something in your head that had your mind scrambled over mechanics, or it was clear and let you be free. And I believe in that. I really do, that if you are too cluttered with mechanics and stress and so on, and all the thoughts are at the front of your mind, I think you're going to struggle.
Mm. Then let's talk about the pre-shot routine and how that can help you clear your mind. Yes?
Well,
pre-shot
routines are very good because it's familiarity. So when you're familiar with your surroundings, you have more confidence. So that's one of the reasons why good players always have a pre-shot routine. So even if it's in the Masters or hitting range balls, they have a familiarity with every single movement. A lot of the average golfers don't do that. They don't have the same movements every time. So there's less familiarity. So pre-shot routines, I think, are very important because it's a set arrangement, and they do not deviate no matter the golf course.
Right.
Or situation.
Right. A lot of the range activity is a lot of sweep and swing and sweep and swing and sweep and swing, right?
You hit a ball, you sweep. We become machine guns.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, there's not much quality there. It's more quantity.
And what do you learn from that? I mean, where's the takeaway on that? That you're feeling looser, that you've gotten your swings in and you're ready to go?
It's exercise. That's, you know, that to me is what it is mostly. And you go back to what Jack Nicklaus said. He never hit a shot even on the range that he didn't make count.
Practice with a purpose.
Absolutely. Every single swing. I don't know many people that do that.
Yeah.
Including yours truly. You know, I get up and just start swinging. And before you know it, you go, whoa, slow down. You know, think about this. Walk away, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I've also noticed for myself, I've been struggling with three putts lately, and the third putt being inside of 5 feet, and that just kills me that I'm doing that. But I've recognized that that's because I walk up to it going, yeah, I got it, and I go, is it good? No, it's not good. But you know, you got to putt it. All right, fine. So I'll just go ahead and of course I missed, you know, a half inch to the right. But I've gone back to, okay, I'm going to do my, even on this short one, I'm going to do my pre-shot routine, and I had 28 putts the other day.
Yeah,
you know,
difference.
Versus 38.
Yeah. And when you struggle in an area, like you might struggle in those short putts, we tend to get more tense, but we tend to rush them too.
Right.
Things we get them faster. Over quickly. So by you doing going into your pre-shot routine and taking that deep breath and taking your time, I'll guarantee it helped.
Well, and tell me about your pre-shot routine. Walk us through it.
Boy, that's why I stink. And I probably have a pre-shot routine. But I don't think about it. It's not conscious. Hmm. I probably do the same thing every single time. But
do you teach a pre-shot routine?
Depends on who it is. Oh. It depends on who it is. If I see somebody who's in a big hurry, I will start to tell them, okay, I want you to back away from the ball. I want you to look at your target. I want you to step into it and try to develop that pre-shot routine. But most lessons, no. I don't know of many lessons that you teach a pre-shot routine. I think, you know, depends on what your goal is. If you've got somebody that's, you know, later on in life, I think that they've played golf for a long time. And, you know, if you want to get to a certain level in golf, playing very well, and you start out young, I think it's good to start with a pre-shot routine.
Of the players that are at the country club that you're at, do you think people mostly go to the range, play, go to the range, play? Or are there people, you see a significant number, a noticeable number of people who go to the range, go home? I mean, they just come there just to be working on the range? Or is it always just a warm-up to get out there?
Well, the mornings, that's when you see people just coming up to warm up and hit balls to go play. It's the afternoon that you see people will come out just to practice and camp out over that basket of golf balls. That doesn't usually happen in the morning. So there's two different times of the day. When I see people out on the range in the afternoon, they're out there practicing and they're there for a purpose. When I see people in the morning, they're just loosening up to go play. Mm-hmm. Now there might be some that are working on something specific, but for the most part, they're just getting warmed up for the day.
Mm-hmm. When we talked about on the pre-shot routine, the word that comes up a lot in mechanics and things is tempo. But the pre-shot routine has its own tempo, right? Has its own rhythm. I guess this is a rhythm versus a tempo. And getting into a solid rhythm, a solid tempo all the way across can really help.
Well, yeah, and I think everybody has... I'll watch somebody's golf swing and how they are, and I'll actually be able to tell whether they're a type A personality or something like that. And I think that if that blood rushes through your veins very quickly, that's not really conducive to a very smooth tempo in your golf swing. It's going to be very aggressive and very hard, and your pre-shot might be quick. If you probably don't even have a pre-shot because you can't wait to get to hit the ball. Mm-hmm. Those are the people that I think would benefit from developing some sort of a pre-shot routine to slow them down, to take the deep breath. They need it more than anybody. So other people are very relaxed in their swing. You can see with their swing tempo that they're kind of a laid-back person and the blood runs through their veins kind of slowly, if you know what I mean. But I think the pre-shot routine's more important for some than others.
Mm-hmm. Well, it helps.
Yeah.
It definitely does help. So one of the things that, you know, I've been doing the show now, I'm in the ninth year of doing it, and I talk to a lot of people, and I've really developed a very strong, I feel like I've developed a strong mental game, and I understand course strategy, which has really helped my game lately. But one of the things that I haven't done a lot of over these years is take lessons. And you gave me a lesson recently.
Mm-hmm.
I can't, let me publicly thank you. Because I can't believe what a change my game has had in the last 2 months. I mean, the day after we had this lesson.
Your mind was spinning when we had that lesson because it
well,
was.
Well, I mentioned to you, we were doing, something else was going on. And I mentioned, I said, I'm really playing the best golf of my life right now.
Yeah.
But I'm struggling with my long irons. I'm mm-hmm. either chunking the ball or hitting it way right. And you said, come on, let me take a look. And within four or five swings, you saw exactly what was going on. And I've been developed that. And so the day after this lesson, we spent an hour together. I went out on the course and I probably lost 10 balls and shot in the high 90s. And sure. I hadn't shot in the 90s in sure. a while. I've been playing consistently in the 80s, which was great. And the next five rounds, I couldn't break 90. I was really struggling. And then it clicked. Something happened. And this last month, the month of June, we've had great weather. I've played six times, which is a tremendous amount of golf for me. And I had one round at 89, one at 85, and everything below that. And this week I played a course, San Geronimo, which I don't think I've ever had lower than an 89 in that course, and I shot an 80.
Good for you. Good
and
for you.
So thank you.
You're welcome.
It's
but obviously you worked hard at it. All I did was
I never went to the range
you.
Once. I've never gone to the range just to hit balls
really?
Since that. But I understood what you were having me do. So when I see the ball flight not doing what I was hoping it, I
you now
have
know why it does
I
that.
I now know yeah. why.
You need to leave in knowing the why. You absolutely need to know if your ball is curving or moving in a certain direction, you've got to know why it's doing that and what it's going to take you physically or mentally to make it change. And a lot of people, they don't know that. And then they try. I always say people tend to reach down in the grab bag and let me try this. Let me try that. And very often it's not even close to what they should be doing or changing. So I always believe that if you want to improve yourself, you need to go to your instructor and find out why is my ball going to the right mechanically, the law, the ball flight laws, whatever it is. And when it does that, what do I need to do to fix it on the next shot or at least minimize it?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people that don't know that.
Well, there's so many people on the golf course that just continue to do the same thing over and over and can't figure
they
out
play,
why.
They play their mistakes or their faults. If they keep slicing it, they just aim farther left and they play their game.
Yeah. 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 They make the adjustments. And there's some people that have a quality game with all these flaws, but they've learned how to work it. So you just kind of step back and keep your mouth shut and going.
Yeah. And they're so used to playing their game that when you do make a change, like if, you know, the lesson we gave you, it can be very difficult to make that change because they feel like, hey, I'm playing okay the way I am. But when you make a change invariably or very often, you can go backwards first.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, look at the tour.
Yeah.
I mean, how many names can we give you of guys who made swing changes and disappeared for a while?
Yeah.
Hopefully they come back.
Yep.
Very few have.
Yeah, not all do. That's correct.
And and suddenly they just disappear. And it's kind of scary. But one of the things that I also learned from you, and I think that gets missed, is we were talking about when you're on the range, hitting the ball, is the goal really hitting the ball or hitting through the ball? Is the full swing, ball is only the middle part of the full swing.
Yeah, exactly. I gave a lesson this morning and that was one of the things we talked about. This person was hitting at the ball. So you do things to have them swing. It's not just the club head. To me, it's their hands. Very often when they're swinging, their hands are stopping at the ball and that snaps that club head ahead. You'll hit behind the ball. You can hook the ball. There's many unfortunate things that can happen when your hand stops. So I want somebody to take their hands as they follow through or as they're hitting the ball and to swing their hands out to the target. So that ensures that their hands stay forward. We don't want to hit at the ball. Like you said, you want to hit through the ball. So you try to think of either hitting through the ball, swinging your hands to the target. I like to have people pick a spot beyond the ball, maybe an inch or two beyond, and try to hit the ground or see their club go through the grass beyond the ball. It can help a tremendous amount in short game and long to actually see your club go through the grass, past the ball. And I've also used this opposite effect. When you see people want to get the ball in the air. Okay, so what they do is they try to flip their hands.
Yep.
They stay behind the ball. They fall away. And I've told people, I want you to hit this ball as low as possible. Drill it 5 feet off the ground. And they've made perfect golf shots that go exactly the height they're supposed to, and they hit them crisply. When somebody tries to hit the ball low, they instinctively know, okay, I've got to deal off the club. I got to get my hands forward and try to hit this ball low and get my way to the left. That's how you hit a golf ball.
Mm.
I mean, you want to accentuate that even further in some cases and move the ball back in your stance and so on to hit the ball low. But when you tell somebody who's been flipping their hands and falling away to try to hit it low, I can't tell you how many times it's actually had somebody hit the ball properly. And so even coming out of a bunker, I'll say every time you hit a bunker shot, I want you to try to hit it purposely into the bank. And now this doesn't apply to everybody, but to me it applies for those that are hanging back or flipping and hitting behind the ball, and then their club is rising before it even gets to the golf ball. Those are the people I want to try to hit it into the bank and follow through, and that ball comes out every time.
There was a couple of shots I had that were, and I realized when I started thinking about it, oh, my hands are coming around to the left here. No mm-hmm. wonder the ball is doing what it's doing, as opposed to going through it and
right.
and ending up facing the target.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that one of the things that you didn't really touch on, but talk about when you talk to your teacher, and this is a big one that I've just learned. You got to find the right teacher. I've worked with a lot of people. I've talked to hundreds of coaches, but finding somebody who is articulate enough and has, you know, can understand what you're doing and can communicate that with you in a way that you're not getting defensive or confused. And I would suggest, so find a teacher that you can work with.
Yeah, there's some better than others, but clearly there's somebody for everybody. And I think that, you know, you can be a very good instructor and just not communicate the way that fits them. And I think you're right. Whether it be a doctor or an instructor or whatever it is, you need to find somebody that you understand and they communicate how you need them to communicate.
And that you trust. I mean,
yeah.
you build that trust.
Yeah.
And because of it right now, like I said, I'm playing with more confidence.
Yeah.
And it's really apparent when I'm on that. It's like really, one point I was standing behind the ball. I was about to take a shot and my eyes were closed. And my friend, like, I guess I was closed for a while. And he goes, "Are you all right?" I went, "Yeah, I'm just trying to visualize what this swing's going to look like."
Good for you.
I just want to, because like I've had a couple bad swings in a row and I need to know what it's supposed to look like on my body and visualize, and went up and nailed it. So
good for you.
So thank you.
You're welcome.
Publicly, thank you. I appreciate him having so much fun. So now my goal is to try to have, and I've only done this 3 times this year, but try to get so I have more rounds in the 70s than in the 90s. That would
good
be,
for you.
You know,
and I'll tell you, going back to the instructor, for all of you out there, you need to find somebody that you believe what they're saying. And I ask this question sometimes after a lesson. Are you drinking the Kool-Aid? And for those of us old enough to know what that means, it just means, do you believe? Yeah, it's a terrible situation, but it's do you believe in what I'm saying? Because if you don't, you're not going to change. You're not going to make this change that we need to. And so if you're not believing in that change, well, then you need to find somebody else, or at least get that person to communicate it differently to see if you do understand and believe.
Well, that was something else that happened to me. Those first 4 or 5 rounds where I just was not doing anything right, but I was committed to making it work because I understood what you were trying to accomplish. And there were so many moments where I was going, you know what? I'm just going back to what I was doing before. I'm not going to do this, but I stopped myself and
that's
I made
what
sure.
Most people do.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And then they don't like the teacher and it's yeah. really
it's
not
their
the teacher's
comfort
fault.
Zone. Well, change is difficult. It just is. Sometimes you can go to somebody and say something and it's a quick change and they tend to get it and move on. But then there's others that, you know, the change is difficult to make and it's a commitment and it's very difficult. It's much easier to go back to your own swing, even if you know you're going to have those poor outcomes sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you once again for making time to be able to come over and have a conversation with me, because I really enjoy talking to you about this. And you and I can go on for a long time, and hopefully we'll get these opportunities to do this. So, Ken, thanks so much for coming back.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Please join our Facebook group, and if you use Twitter, follow us at Golf Smarter, hashtag Sound Advice. And if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, send me an email by clicking on the Hey Fred button on the free Golf Smarter app for iPhone or Android, or at golfsmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.